Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Tlevi, and joining me in studio this Monday evening are Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Santon and Dricus Kumbrink from Capricraft. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS us to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Jonathan, Dricus, nice to have you both in studio tonight. And it doesn't, if you look at the where the all share finished, down a fifth of a percent, it doesn't look particularly hairy, but in some ways it was very hairy out there today. You saw some really big shares in the JSE Top 40 getting whacked, Aspen and Discovery, most importantly. Dricus, actually, we might as well get to the question on Discovery that's already come through, because it closed 8% thereabouts weaker. And it says, what are the rumours about their life policy reserves besides the NHI worries? What's going on?
Well, apparently there's a report out, I haven't seen it yet, from Macquarie, I think, that alludes to a 15 billion rand hole in the balance sheet. I think that should be, that has something to do with the actuarial assumptions behind the funding of the policies. And this is not the first time that an analyst has alluded to that. If it's that, it's been somewhat of a debate the last few years.
I mean, people have always taken issue with Discovery's what they call very aggressive actuarial assumptions.
Absolutely. So it's difficult to say. You would need to have full disclosure on exactly what the individual policies and what the distribution of those policies are. I haven't got conviction to make a call on any of that, but I guess that's what it's about.
Yeah. Jonathan, the thing is, though, it kind of caps a weakening trend for Discovery. So Thursday you had it reacting quite badly to the NHI bill, which is tabled. But, if we look at a chart, or maybe we bring up a slightly longer-term chart of Discovery, this thing has been going down for quite a while now.
I think it since the last set of results, which came out early in the year, where profitability was knocked back because of CapEx and the venture into the new bank or setting up the new bank. That was when there was a catalyst for the first pullback in the share price.
Yeah.
Market wasn't really expecting the earnings to be pedestrian as they were. And the share price has just been drifting. And like you say, in the last two or three weeks, it started really. And
like Thursday, the last 2 days, it's correct. Just been Thursday, a bit of a horror show.
Yeah, Thursday, the NHI issue. And then, of course, this rumors about this report that's come out.
I mean, the problem is that when you've got these rumors, you haven't seen the report. No one actually knows. So everyone gets a bit panicky. South Africans hate sort of short-selling kind of reports. Yeah. Look at what happened when Viceroy was big on the scene. Mm. Do you think, what would you do now? A, if you're a Discovery shareholder, or B, if you're looking at this with interest, do you just take
firstly,
on your hands?
Firstly, if you've done your homework, right, then you should already have a better idea. If you haven't got any conviction on it, then you should have been selling into the weakness. Doesn't matter what's happening. If you didn't do your homework, just get out. Because you don't know what the downside might be. If you did your homework, you would have an idea at least to what the downside can be. Mm-hmm. Secondly, if you do have conviction, you don't have enough information to make good assumptions, good calculations, calculated risk, basically. So wait for the report to come out. Well, I think it's already out, just haven't seen it. And decide for yourself. Yeah. And that's a difficult thing for a retail investor to do. And I feel sorry for a lot of retail investors out there, in this market especially.
Yeah, I mean, this market really is punishing people. Okay, let's talk about... just before we talk about Aspen, there's a question on the banks, and Discovery is sort of financial services, and it's got Discovery Bank, asking, other than the weak rand, is there any fundamental reason why South African banking stocks are getting hammered lately? First Rand in particular is at a strong technical support level. Would you be buying it here with a six-month view? Jonathan, what's going on with the banking sector?
Well, 6 months view.
That's short-term trader. I think there's a couple of so-called linked answers to the question. So you can't really decouple the weakness of the banking sector from the weaker rand, which is in turn linked to the potential downgrades that we're going to be having or could have in the imminent future. And I think those factors, together with the weak rand, together with the banking results, I think Nedbank and Standard Bank reported last week. I mean, let's be honest, those growth numbers were pretty much average.
Yeah. Well, there were. I suppose you could argue if you were a banker and you're going to take home a whacking great salary. And I've been doing some research on this over the weekend. It is
big salary.
It sticks in one's craw, I can tell you, what bankers have paid themselves. In fact, if I can just have a little moment here. Over the past financial year, 2018, going through all the annual reports of the big four, First Rand, Standard Bank, Absa, and Nedbank, using the executive and non-executive salary bill, it is 852 million rand. That is what South African banking execs and non-execs took home last year. Astonishing. Anyway, that aside, I've lost my train of thought now on my rant. Jonathan, but they would argue that their growth is ahead of economic growth and it's also ahead of inflation growth. Sure. So they would say they're actually doing pretty well.
Yes, I mean, you know, you can't expect to get substantial growth in a very weak economy. I mean, we're growing at, 0.5%, if that, this economy. So to get above double-digit earnings growth consistently in that kind of environment, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. So it's just a weak environment, really. And with all the political noise, with all the potential downgrades and the weaker rand, sure, you're going to see a fallout like this.
Dricus, do you think the downgrade is now actually in the price of the rand, which sank to about 15, 40 odd?
Especially if you need one of the rating agencies, that's still at Lehman on investment grade just before it defaulted. If you need them to make your investment decisions for you, then I think you should get another day job. Secondly, this is the first stop. This is not where the story ends. Yes, we've been downgraded and now, you know, SA fails or SA survives and succeed down the road. It's not a binary outcome. This is the first stop. There's many levels into junk. This is the first bus stop into, you know, junk neighborhood. And
which ain't pretty.
So, yeah, I think the downgrade is already priced in. If you look at our sovereign credit spreads, it's even trading at higher rates. So they're paying, you know, you're paying more to get insurance against our sovereign default than, for instance, Brasilia or Turkey. So to a certain extent, that's priced in. What the initial knock will be from flows, you know, from passive investors, I don't know. I think there will be a shock. And secondly, taking a 2, 3, 4, 5 year view, we've still got deteriorating fundamentals fiscally. And, you know, that raises all sorts of questions down the road.
Just another point on the currency before I go back to questions and also talk about Aspen. You saw the Argentine peso collapse in a heap today, down, I think it was as much as 30% weaker. And Argentina is quite interesting because they were forced into an IMF bailout last year. I mean, they have endless IMF bailouts. They seem to have debt calamities on a regular basis. But then you had this reformist president come into power, the Kirchners and the Fernandez, Kirchners.
Call them Peronists.
The Peronists, yes. Mm. They were forced out, the crazy left-wingers. But he had to take some bitter medicine, and you had the IMF reforms imposed on Argentina. Now, in primary elections, you're seeing a backlash against this, and the Peronists are getting back. Seemingly, they've found favor again with the electorate. So they're thinking Fernandez Kirchner could be back in power. Does IRAN weakness, Jonathan, have anything to do with what is happening in Argentina? As in, people are seeing maybe what's playing out in Argentina now, playing out in South Africa in the future?
It might be.
That was a very long-winded question, sorry.
It might be, but I think it's more to do with other things that our local situation more so than anything. And one can draw parallels between the two. I haven't really followed that political situation too closely, so I'm not as informed as yourself. But having said that, I think it might be. I mean, when Argentina peso takes a knock, sure, everyone looks. When the Brazilian real takes a knock, it affects emerging markets. Same with the Turkish lira. Mm. So there is, I guess, a little bit of negative sentiment rubbing off perhaps into our currency. But I think it's more to do with what's going on locally and the implications for ourselves.
Yeah, okay. Then getting to Aspen, so let's talk about the horror performers today. And in fact, there were some strong performers in the Jersey, and hopefully we'll mention them at some stage. Aspen is down 10% with no news to justify the pummeling. What's happening? Should one continue to hold and use this drop to reduce average cost? In other words, average down and buy more shares? Or should we cut our losses? I'm a long-suffering Aspen shareholder.
This is a bit of a binary outcome. It's either the raised capital or not. It's a balance sheet issue. I think a lot of the drop the last, say, few weeks is not justified, playing into the NHI theme maybe. And I would hold and wait at these levels. If you've held since $300, it doesn't make sense selling down anyway. Mm-hmm. You've already paid most of the pain. Neither would I be a buyer at this stage. I don't have conviction on Aspen at this moment. It depends on what they can do with their balance sheet.
I mean, Jonathan, is it the case that it's NHI worries and there may be a little bit of contagion, although I'm just not sure how Aspen gets involved in this, or is it the fact that you've got a weaker rand and Aspen's got a lot of international debt, and that's just making it more expensive for the company?
I think it's both. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head with the international debt and the weaker rand, a big issue for them to repay back their debt. But then again, the NHI, you know, one's got to say, well, can Aspen, if NHI comes into play, will Aspen be a preferred supplier and will they be able to get same or similar margins by supplying the NHI or government-backed medical scheme as they are doing with other private medical schemes? I think that is a question the market's got.
Yeah. There's so many questions on the NHI and still too little clarity. The one thing that we did have clarity on today was Omnia. So they've announced where they've pitched the rights offer. Yeah. And there was a lot of fear that it could be at 5 Rand or between 5 Rand and 8 Rand a share. In the event, it's at 20 Rand. And I think it's, 100 million new shares to be offered. The thing is, it's going to be underwritten by the 6 largest asset managers in Omnia. That surely should actually give an Omnia shareholder a little bit more confidence, right?
It should. I think, I'm not sure that all investors in Omnia will take it up, and some of those asset managers will end up taking extra shares, and that's fine. Obviously, they've done their homework and they know that Omnia is fine once it's been recapitalized. I would actually re-look at the company once they've done that and the dust have settled. So there's still a business case there, not the best business in the world. Mm-hmm. They've bought a few stuff that I wasn't happy with over the last few years, but this is mostly a balance sheet story. Obviously, the business was under pressure. You had the droughts that played into fertilizer demand, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, this is a balance sheet issue. If that can be restored, there's still a decent business in there. Mm.
Jonathan, would you follow your rights in Omnia?
It's not one that I follow as such. Never mind following the rights. So I'd have to do my homework. Like Trika said, do your homework. I haven't done my homework on this one. But they've had problems. They've had problems the last 18 months.
Going to send you to the North Corner.
You can't do homework on all 5,000 investable odd assets.
No, but there's only 400 or so in the JSE, so...
But we did look offshore as well.
Sharpen up, boys. Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do. You can SMS us 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or you can tweet us @businessdayTV using the hashtag stockwatch. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to markets in the United States. Oh, that looks dreadful. The S&P down 1.9%. Is that correct? Not too long ago, it was only down about 0.75%. So it's obviously been a slightly calamitous start to the week there. The Nasdaq only down 0.1%. The Dow Jones trading 1.2% in the red. Across the Atlantic, you had the FTSE 100 pulling back 0.4% today. CAC 40 down by a similar margin. And the DAX dropping back about 0.1%. There certainly are fears about how trade wars are going to impact all economies. And I think Germany's IFO index came out with a pretty weak reading today. Still with me in studio are Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth, Santon, and Drikas Combrink from Capicraft. That S&P figure, is that surprise you that it's down to the extent it is? Or US markets sort of starting the week on the back foot to such an extent?
What we have is an increase in geopolitical risk at the moment. Luckily, we've got declining interest rates all over the globe. And, you know, declining interest rates can cover a multitude of sins, geopolitical and otherwise. But from time to time, you'll see this flare-up, trade war, etc. And because there's already the trade war friction, a geopolitical or diplomatic flashpoint in Hong Kong, you know, that provides a flashpoint for a diplomatic crisis. What is the US or the European response going to be to this? If it's, you know, if the intensity of the what they call now riots, it actually looks like a revolution if you look at what's going on in the street. If that increases and China's response to that is more and more violent, what is the response going to be? The diplomatic response, especially from the US, will that cause the Trump administration to double down on the rhetoric that's already out there? You know, so I think that's the number one thing in the markets today.
Yeah. Jonathan, and you can see it in the FT ran an article today about long bonds and just how well people have done if they bought bonds last year. And they were saying, you know, a lot of eyebrows were raised if you had bought Austrian 100-year government bonds yielding 2.1%. But because of what's happened to the price, so the yield and price inverse correlations, you'd have made a 66% return if you'd bought those bonds last year, because so many people are just buying sort of these bonds in a bit of a panic, and you saw the gold price rising. Would you be buying gold shares on the JSE? And you've seen them being quite resilient in the last few weeks, if not months.
Sure. So I've never really been a gold bull. But having said that, I think there is a space currently to buy gold for the short term. It's not really, you know, you buy it fundamentally for the next 3 to 5 years. So I still think that with all this geopolitical risk going on and the gold price moving up, and right now it seems like it's quite stable at 1500 plus, you're going to see these gold mining companies making lots of money. So,
and do you think it's going to hold here? Because I suppose for people who have been burnt, you know, they see the gold price and the gold shares shooting up. They think, oh, I'm too late. Okay, but I'm going to buy myself some. And then, you know, situation normalizes and the gold price turns on its head, and everyone who bought in right at the end feels really bitter and twisted about it.
So I guess it all boils down to that gold price. So if there's this uncertainty that's going to continue, one takes a view on that, gold price remains elevated, well then, you know, keep buying, or, you know, stick with the trade. But when that settles down, and hopefully, okay, now I'm not speaking for the gold bulls, but I'm saying hopefully the trade wars mellow out, and if there's such a way of doing that, if Donald Trump can back off a bit, well then gold could pull back, and then the dynamics change.
Yeah.
So,
Drukas, your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, gold is generally seen as a hedge. So if you buy it at these levels, if you still want a hedge at these levels, then you must just make peace with the fact that if markets turn positive, volatility calms down, and, you know, equity markets takes a turn for the positive, then your gains there would offset your losses on the gold price. So you have to see it from a portfolio perspective, as should you do with most assets.
Okay, there's a question for you in particular asking whether you think the short sellers report on Burford Capital, which is a share that you've picked a couple of times, has any credibility to it? And secondly, why are you bullish on uranium given your holding in Cameco?
Okay, so last week was a horror week for myself after the short sell report. I expected something of the sort when the share started declining. And luckily, when the report came out and started glancing through it, you realized that these guys were busy with accounting trickery, and there wasn't much substance to the allegations. And the problem is that I think it's been a hot stock in the UK market. It's increased by, it's a 10-bagger over the last 3 or 4 years. So it's attracted a lot of easy hands. It's a lot of hot money that's flowed into it. And I think what the short report did is shake out all those investors that did not have a proper grasp of the business. One of the allegations that they make, or what the whole thing is based, is on fair value accounting. They've got level 3 assets. It's like venture capital at the end of the day. But they've got a whole portfolio of them, and they value them as the amounts, you know, the probability of those amounts that they will recover from the litigation cases comes due, or it becomes apparent.
Yeah.
So they've got these fair value gains. That's about 45% of NAV. And these guys are saying, basically in the report, that that's actually zero. They're making no account for that. And a lot of other shenanigans and trickery in that report that makes no sense at all, if you know the company already. So I think it was a well-executed short attack. I don't think it will survive a month or two from here. But I think the damage is done. I think that the share will trade at a lower rating for quite a while until the company comes out and executes on the strategy.
Okay. Yeah. And then you're holding in uranium.
Uranium, 40 to 50% increase in demand over the next 5 to 10 years, and that's only from nuclear reactors that's already being built. So a huge increase in demand, supply is being constrained at the moment. So you're exactly at the point at the cycle when the price is very weak, but demand is increasing, but that demand isn't realized at the moment, it's forward demand. And secondly, they're already cutting back supply. We've seen this in platinum the last 5 years as well. So I think we're in the right spot with regards to the uranium cycle. It's something that I can say for one commodity that I cannot say about the rest. It's uncorrelated to global markets. That's the second one. And thirdly is the world is quickly becoming disillusioned with renewable energy if you do your homework. And the number one reliable source of energy seems to be nuclear still. Yeah. So that's a hot debate at the moment, but I think the world is becoming disillusioned with renewable energy as such.
Yeah. Jonathan, I don't know if you have any thoughts on uranium as an investment case, because you can actually also, I mean, if you could have exposure to uranium through Anglo Gold. I mean, they have uranium as a byproduct, although they don't really strip it out and it's not a big feature in their lives, but...
Don't follow that. It seems like Lucas has done his homework.
Okay, covered it comprehensively.
One fact.
Yes?
1 gram of uranium has got 300,000 times the energy intensity of 1 gram of gold. As easy as that.
Mm, okay, then there's a bit of a storage problem and a few things. Anyway, that's a subject for another show, I suppose. On NASPAS, the question is, I currently have NASPAS shares. There's been talk about the NASPAS European listing, but I'm not sure how I'll be affected by it because I haven't actually received any ballot or voting option yet. Is there a deadline for trading NASPAS shares in order to participate in the unbundling? So, the creation of, what's the process on Euronext?
Yeah.
Should they have received? Because there was a snafu with the circulars that were supposed to go out to shareholders. So it was delayed, wasn't it?
So it was delayed, and then they sent out the circulars again, I suspect, and hopefully by now all shareholders would have received the notifications. So my suggestion, so firstly, is there a time limit? If that person, if the viewer is a shareholder, well then they're in. So they're going to participate in it. For potential new shareholders, I think tomorrow is the deadline, so by close of business, if you want to participate in the unbundling, you have to be a shareholder in NASPAS by close of business tomorrow. Having said that,
so you have to buy your NASPAS shares tomorrow?
Tomorrow, correct. Okay. Then going forward, there is a cutoff date. I think process are going to list on the 11th of September. So typically you've got a couple of days prior to that. Mm. I don't know the exact dates. Yeah, it is a strange date.
But you'll most probably get an email or a phone call from your broker.
Yeah, otherwise...
If you don't change brokers.
Otherwise phone your broker. Phone your broker.
If you've got a mandate, the guy that's mandated to do it will already
take the choice
for you. Make the choice for you.
Correct.
I don't know if either of you have NASPAS shares. Sure. What did you elect?
Who doesn't?
You got it. It's the market. I mean, it's...
So what did you elect? Did you elect to...
It works on a client-by-client basis, and I'll tell you why, because you've got certain clients that historically have got very large NASPAS positions and have got very, very big capital gains tax liabilities in their portfolios should they sell. Now, if they go with Prosus, they're going to realize some of that capital gain liability now in this financial tax year, and that may or may not be suitable to that particular client. However, if they choose option two, I think it is, where you don't go for the Prosus shares, but you get more NASPAS shares, well, then you're just delaying that capital gains tax event for one day when you sell those shares.
Yeah.
And that, those are the things that you need to have a discussion with those clients about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I personally think that the unbundling will unlock a bit more value for shareholders in the combined entities.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Sam.
And just a very quick question before stock picks. Would the panel buy Massmart or African Rainbow capital at these levels?
Oh, jeez. Oh,
would you buy Mass?
I shouldn't. I hope this guy's asking the question with the gun in his hands.
Mass, why don't you wonder
what African is... Robo Capital's got a big discount to NAV. But the problem is that a lot of the accounting in there, there is some directors' valuations in there, but you know, you take that with a shovel of salt. So you know, the NAV may be justified, but I think they're doing some interesting things in there. But it does feel a bit like a pet project.
And I'm going to leave MassMart. Sorry to the viewer. Perhaps we can pick it up tomorrow night or in the next couple of days. Of course, the results are going to be coming out soon. Stock picks this evening. Jonathan, okay. JP Morgan.
Okay, going to go with the offshore theme. JP Morgan. It's a big multinational bank domiciled in the USA. It's got a $350 billion market capitalization. Price about $108. Might be a bit lower now with the markets being down.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, okay. It's on a P of 11 times, dividend yield of just under 3%. So certainly not an expensive company to buy from a valuation perspective. Last year they grew earnings by 42%. They're on ROE of about 14.8 times, which is higher than most of the competition.
Yeah, and not bad for US Bank after being nowhere, and in fact, similar to almost similar to South African banks. Okay, so JP Morgan, the metrics for you stack up. Yeah. Drikas, how about you?
Curo.
Geez, Curo is scraping.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So
new
all
lows.
Of all of the PSU. I don't know what
Jonathan keeps
what Pete Maton is doing wrong at the moment, but. All of PSG's investments are falling at the moment, but I do think some of it is unjustified. There's a trading statement that came out from Curo last week, and that trading statement showed very, very lean growth, I think 6 to 9% at the end of the day. That's headline earnings per share growth. It says that they maintained margins, but they say nothing about revenue. They took on a lot of debt in the last 12 months. I'm thinking that interest expense much higher, and that the EBIT growth and the revenue growth is actually more healthy than the 69% headline earnings per share growth. And the market has maybe on too little information done too much at the moment. At these levels, sitting at a historic P of 27, I think, or 28. Yeah. If you don't think that Curo is going to grow and not buying at these levels, do not buy any SA incorporated stock.
Yeah.
Because then you're actually saying that SA is going to be a failed state. And then you don't need to, just don't own
just
anything.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. On that sobering note, we'll leave it there. Drikas, Jonathan, thanks very much for your time this evening. Jonathan Fisher is from PSG Wealth Santander. Drikas Kumbrink is from Capicraft. We'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. Stock picks this evening. Jonathan, okay. JP Morgan.
Okay, going to go with the offshore theme. JP Morgan, it's a big multinational bank domiciled in the USA. It's got a $350 billion market capitalization. Price about $108. Might be a bit lower now with the markets being down.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, okay. It's on a P of 11 times, dividend yield of just under 3%. So certainly not an expensive company to buy from a valuation perspective. Last year, they grew earnings by 42%. They're on ROE of about 14.8 times, which is higher than most of the competition.
Yeah, and not bad for US Bank after being nowhere. And in fact, similar to, almost similar to South African banks. Okay, so JP Morgan, the metrics for you stack up.
Yeah.
Drikas, how about you?
Curo.
Geez, Curo is scraping sort of...
So all of the PSU, I don't know what Pete Maton is doing wrong at the moment, but all of PSG's investments are falling at the moment. But I do think some of it is unjustified. There's a trading statement that came out from Curo last week, and that trading statement showed very, very lean growth. I think 6 to 9% at the end of the day. That's headline earnings per share growth. It says that they maintained margins, but they say nothing about revenue. They took on a lot of debt in the last 12 months. I'm thinking that interest expense much higher, and that the EBIT growth and the revenue growth is actually more healthy than the 69% headline earnings per share growth. And the market has maybe on too little information done too much at the moment. at these levels sitting at a historic PE of 27, I think, or 28. Yeah. If you're not going, if you don't think that Curro is going to grow and not buying at these levels, do not buy any SA incorporated stock. Yeah. But the, okay. Because then you're actually saying that SA is going to be a failed state, and then you don't need to, you know, just don't own
just
anything.
Don't do it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So on that sobering note, we'll leave it there. Drikus, Jonathan, thanks very much for your time this evening. Jonathan Fisher is from PSG Wealth Santander, and Drikus Kombrink is from Capicraft. We'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.